Okay, so thank you very much, Bill. We have a chance for each of our speakers to respond, and they each have 2 minutes. We'll start with Ward Connolly.
There are so many things that Bill said that just aren't true. And I don't want to go through all of them, but some of them are quite significant. Meredith Kachigian cried at the meeting, but she cried because Roy Brophy, who was on Bill's side, was pressuring her. Pressure didn't come from us. Pete Wilson didn't sponsor 209. 209 was sponsored by Tom Wood and Glenn Custrid months before Pete Wilson, years almost before Pete Wilson decided to run for president. So Pete Wilson didn't sponsor that. Bill says, I'm using the Board of Regents. When I go someplace and people introduce me as a member of the Board of Regents, Bill, they do the same thing with him. Member of the Board of Regents. Once you reach a certain position and you get something on your portfolio, people use that. But I'm not trying to use the University of California, the Board of Regents, to advance my campaign. It's something that I take with me as a member of the Board of Regents, and it's credit or it's baggage, depending on the circumstance. But I'm not trying to use it. Gray Davis would be out of his mind to embrace what Bill Bagley is asking the Regents to do. He said that he would not frustrate 209. He said that his appointees are there to represent his point of view. And if the Regents on that board, appointed by Governor Davis, vote to rescind 209, Gray Davis will have broken his promise to the people of this state. And that is precisely what Bill Bagley is asking them to do. Divisive. Tell me what public policy issue isn't divisive. Public policy, by definition, is asking people to choose sides. By nature, it's divisive. It's not the question of whether it's divisive. It's whether or not you're asking people to make a choice on the basis of the facts that are presented. But we shouldn't run away from issues because some people are going to be on one side and others are going to be on another. We shouldn't be trying to rewrite history. I don't think that SP1, the resolution that ended preferences, was a mistake. How many of you here think it was a mistake? Let me see a show of hands. That it was a mistake. That it was a mistake. 8, 9. How many of you think that it was not a mistake?
Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Let me just read something else to you. Let me read something else to you. Last week, these are college students. Roughly 84% of the 1,004 respondents to a wide-ranging survey conducted by the Zogby International said that ethnic diversity on campus is important. But 79% said that lowering the entrance requirements for some students, regardless of the reason, was unfair to the rest of the student body. And 77% said it was not right to give preferential treatment, even if it meant denying admission to other students. One final thing. Bill talks about our yield, the number of students who are being admitted to our law schools. We never were able to compete with Harvard and Stanford and Yale. We never were able to compete because they can offer full scholarships on the basis of race, and we can't. That's the reality. But let's talk about whether or not we are welcomed. We send out the welcome mat. Recently, 13 students from a certain region of the state, the Bay Area, met in the loft of Jerry Brown's home with Chancellor Burdahl to talk about the admissions offer that they had received. The 13 students, and I'm reading from the Oakland Tribune, the 13 students, all of whom have acceptance letters but have not yet enrolled, could be sure on one point. They're wanted at the university. Read on. Quote, it is an extraordinarily diverse campus, even in the wake of 209, Burdahl said of the university. As disappointing as the number of underrepresented minority admissions have been, we still remain the most diverse university of our quality in the United States. In that same article, at one point during his speech, Burdahl asked for a show of hands, wanting to know who had made the decision to attend Berkeley. all but one raised their hands. And the article concludes, quote, this is Antrina Brantley, 16, who attends Emory High School in Emeryville, said she plans to attend UC Berkeley, but that race was never a factor in her application or decision process. Quote, I was just thinking of myself as a person and not as a black person. End of quote, she said.
Bill, 2 minutes.
Oh, we can do it in 30 seconds. Incidentally, I understand the makeup of the audience, and I'm glad that you people care. I'm glad that you feel the way you feel. You're not the majority in the world, but what the hell, you'll get there someday. Except the Hispanics are going to take over, my friends. Not too many people of color in this audience as I look you over. Not too many people of color in this audience as I look you over. But I didn't look you over for that reason. I looked you over to communicate. Oh, my friend Ward. My friend Ward. Here's another number for you. It's maybe totally extraneous. Interpret it for yourselves. Remember, we're talking about the reaction of qualified students vis-a-vis the University of California. 1997, that's before the 95 action of the board took effect. Out of all these applicants, we get 60, 70,000 applicants a year for the university system. 1,953 declined to state their race. That's fine. That's fine. Good for them. 1998, the next year, after SP1 took effect, 5,600 declined. You can clap again. But you know the difference between those numbers, 3,500 or so, these are people that didn't want to be identified because they're going to afraid that they might not be admitted to the university because, my God, the university is against some kind of diversity. Oh! You interpret the numbers. I told you, I opened the sentence by saying, you interpret the numbers. I thought I'd get that response. That's why I said it that way. Let me just close. Let me close for the time being with just a little bit of a, I don't know why those people changed the way they did. I don't. Let me just close. Oh, stop cajoling and cavorting and making noises. Let me finish in 30 seconds, okay? What the hell? You know, Voltaire said, I think I'll reverse his statement. I agree with everything you're saying, but I will defend to the death against your right to say it. That's a reverse of Voltaire, my friends. So try to be civil. Let me just quote two or three people. This has nothing to do with the University of California. I didn't come here to defend all of the extensions of affirmative action. I didn't do that. And frankly, David, wherever you are, I wasn't billed as such. I was billed as somebody who wanted to defend the University of California. And I've done it. But when you talk about, in the broader sense, affirmative action, not as a matter of quotas. Quotas is a miserable word. People use that just to gig you. We're against quotas. You're against quotas. Everybody's against quotas. But are you against an effort to bring about equality? No. No, we agree. But in the context of the bigger world, here's three or four quotes and I'll quit. Robert Allen, chairman of AT&T, affirmative action is not just the right thing to do, it's a business necessity. This becomes relevant in a moment. Chairman, CEO, Procter & Gamble. Diversity is an integral part of the character of our company. It gives us unity. It gives us strength. It gives us talent. Richness of talent we need to be successful, to sell our products to people of all cultures. My good God, the new chairman of the Bank of America, Hugh McCall, who's not the greatest hero in the world in California, the first steps of creating a successful business is to manage the changing workforce, to appreciate the growing number of cultural, educational, and labor backgrounds. The second step is to use diversity to our advantage. You can't have diversity
in the economic workplace unless you have some diversity in the educational institutions of California. Thank you.
Okay, so those of you who have questions, if you wait for Alex with the microphone, and please raise your hand. Alex, is the gentleman in the aisle there? And please make it a short question and address who you're asking the question to.
Okay, my question is for Mr. Bagley. The 18 admittees and only 2 accepted at UCLA, is your assumption that the other 16 are part of a lost generation because they're sitting at home not doing anything, or because they went to Harvard Law School? And
All right. There's a mic over here. I assume, and you are assuming, so I'm agreeing with your assumption, that they went to Harvard, Stanford, Yale, some of those wonderful institutions, probably got a scholarship to do so. In the context of their individual education, they're not a lost generation. In the context of the remaining student body of that law school suffered by their not being there. Laugh, if you will.
Thank you. I'd like to ask about the minority students who are now getting into Cal and other University of California campuses.
If you could hold the mic horizontal.
Okay. Can you tell us if, since the implementation of the 1995 resolution, have more of the minority students stayed in to graduate? Because I've seen a lot of them get there but not be able to stay there.
I sat in on a Berkeley normings, what they call a norming session, for a day just to make sure that I understood the process. And one of the things that we don't hear very often is that the number of high achieving, and I don't know the reason for it, and Chancellor Berdahl didn't know either, but the number of high achieving black students and Hispanic students went up dramatically in the aftermath of 209. I don't know why, they don't know why, but the number went up dramatically. Those that were not as competitive at Berkeley, for example, went down, and maybe you can explain why the number went down, but it's hard to explain why the number went up. The thing that was most interesting was that they pointed out that the academic gap that had existed prior to this new regime is narrowing rapidly. There was something like a 230-point SAT gap between black and white prior to the implementation of this policy. Now it is down to 124, from 230 to 124 SAT points. That's black in relation to white. And among Chicanos, Latinos, the gap is reduced from 203 to 142. And their projection is that that is going to translate into retention and graduation that will be identical without regard to color or ethnicity or race, because the students will be admitted basically at the same level and they will graduate basically at the same level. The quality of the student body throughout the system, every campus says this is the highest quality we've ever had.
Agree. A question for Ward Conway. We now arguably have their class of politicians and government bureaucrats who have a strong interest in there being different classes of citizens, some of whom are disadvantaged, and between whom they need to mediate. How do you address that? I mean, the notion that, in fact, there are a huge group of people that have a big interest in continuing to have classes of citizens who are dependent in some respect upon the state, and are victims on an ongoing basis.
That is a real problem, and I think we have to characterize it without getting pejorative or running anybody down. But on both sides of the aisle, there are people who have an institutional interest in preserving whatever it is that they're fighting or trying to change. And I don't think that there are many places in public policy where that institutional interest, that industry, if you will, is greater than with respect to this kind of issue. There are many organizations that have as their mission maintaining the policies that exist because their constituency is expecting them to do so. And what I have urged is that not that we eliminate all affirmative action, but that the $250 million bill that we are spending in the fiscal year 2000-2001 2000-2001 it's 250. 1999 to 2000 it's 180. That we spend that on the basis of need. We have outreach programs that are trying to help underperforming schools. That's legitimate. Whether they are white or black or Asian or whatever, that's legitimate. That's good affirmative action. We ought to be doing it. But doing it on the basis of race, mainly because of the industry that's out there, I think is wrong. Now, that isn't to suggest that all discrimination is gone. It's not. It isn't to suggest that we don't still need further changes. And I think that a lot of changes still need to be made in the procurement area. A lot of the discussion centers around the admissions policies. But in the area of procurement contracts, there's still a lot of work to be done there to make sure that people have equal access to bid on the jobs. And I think that the emphasis has not been placed there. But the industry, those with an institutional interest in preserving their point of view, is formidable.
Oh, the gentleman right there.
Thank you. This is for both of you, this matter of welcome. I'm thinking back to how I was bothered at the time this issue first came up, because I was hearing from many opponents of SP1 that this would send a signal that minorities were not welcome anymore at the university. And I also heard of stories of members of the opposition actually letting people know that they were no longer welcome. I'm wondering whether anybody has any evidence of anybody who supported SP1 ever sending a signal that minorities were not welcome.
I'll answer. Frankly, the message was sent largely by my guest, my friend over here on my left. I think Bill has done more to propagate that notion than anybody on our side of the table. We have done everything we can to say to them that you're welcome. But you know, if you keep saying to people, the reason the Regents did that is because they didn't want you, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. People begin to believe that garbage.
No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. Every time I speak, and I've said it here three or four times, I said, rightly or wrongly, I've advocated outreach. I'll say it, if I didn't say it earlier this evening, that one of the pluses, my friend, of what was done is the fact that the administration and the board woke up to the need for outreach. That's plus. All I'm saying is add to the plus. Get rid of the damned outs, that damn spot that's still in there, in our craw, in the craw of others. And it is there. I've handed out material. I've shown you quotes from people that are saying the same thing. It's not I. One other aspect that I didn't mention, I'll do it right now. I am told by very high authority at the University of California administration, you can ask me who it was later, that one half of the diverse members of the faculty have either left or are leaving. We can't recruit, apparently. I say apparently. Now, if somebody's lying to me, you can check that out. But I am being told that we are having a hell of a time, in fact, losing diversity in the faculty. UC Berkeley expert on diversity quits, went to Harvard. This is just one of two or three. But the fact is that there is an atmosphere that we could correct so easily. We could correct it so easily. You know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. There's a whole brand new Board of Regents coming on in the next two or three or four years. It's going to happen, just as it did in the Royal situation. It's going to happen. And it'll never happen by a vote of 13 to 12. I can count about 10 or 11 votes right now. I can count. You can count. You can look at the list. You can see all the people who voted the other way. There were 10 of them. There are 8 or 9 left of those 10. You can count up. But you don't want to prevail. You don't want to prevail by 13 to 12, because that's not a message. You want to prevail by 20 to 3. And the day that Ward joins me in saying, by God, you're welcome, we're going to rescind paragraphs 2 and 3 of that resolution, we'll win. 20 to 3. There'll be three people who won't know what the hell's going on, but there are always three people at the Board of Regents who don't know what's going on. Thank you very much.
Let me just say one thing, by the way. The professor that's leaving in the Ethnic Studies Department at Berkeley is going from an associate professor to a full professor at Harvard. And at Harvard, as a full professor, his children will also receive a legacy, if you will, admission. So Bill should have told you that this is not simply leaving because he doesn't feel welcome at Berkeley.
He said that, Bill.
The dude got a better job.
You know, Ward, I was hoping to talk to something. They talk about diversity, and I was at the University of California in the 1960s, and I went to graduate school there. And at the time, it was quite interesting. At Evans Hall, a computer center, you know, the fifth floor was Chinese from Taiwan, and then the fourth floor, this was at 2 a.m. in the morning, and then the fourth floor were the Chinese from the mainland. But what I saw, and I couldn't tell the difference between their language on the elevator, and they used to kid me because of that. But in terms of diversity, what is remarkable to me is the tremendous increase in growth in the Chinese students at the University of California at Berkeley. And all this stuff about how the university is not open to diversity is kind of belied by this enormous growth of the Chinese student. And I just wondered if you, and I believe that that has then led away from the concept of affirmative action, but towards this concept of diversity, because it seems to me that the growth of the Chinese student illustrates that a minority group, which works hard.
Do you have a question?
And so the question is, what does this mean
do you agree?
To you in terms of the in terms of the issues that we're talking about today?
Well, a statistic that keeps haunting me is that in 1980, 2 years after Bakke, the number of, quote, Asian students admitted to the University of California was about 12% system-wide. 1999, that number was about 32%. Let's compare the number of black students admitted to Berkeley, or to UC. 1980, about 3.9%. Before affirmative action was eliminated, preferences were eliminated, 5.1%. Roughly the same percentage in the population, out of 18,000 Asian students graduating from high school every year, about 8,000 are UC eligible. About 8,000 out of 18,000 or so. Out of black students graduating from UC from high school every year, about 18,544 are UC eligible. Now what that says is that something is happening over here that seems to be working. And we have been concerned that Berkeley, for example, would become, quote, all Asian, and have consciously tried to keep down their numbers in some respects. We have done everything we can to make sure we bring up the number of black students. If you're making a product and one is working and one isn't, you don't keep doing it the same way. So what it says to me is that there's something going on outside the classroom, in the families, that is inspiring people of a certain cultural background to excel academically. And what we ought to be doing is trying to take that model, whatever it is, and trying to carry it over. And it's not just black kids, by the way, that are falling behind, quote, Asians. Whites are also beginning to fall behind. And so I think that there's a lesson to be learned there for all of us, not to hold down those who are studying hard and excelling, but to make sure that everybody understands that message. And a lot of these kids, I saw a statistic the other day, by the time an average black kid starts the first grade, he's a year behind, and they never catch up. That's what we ought to be working on. That's the thing that ought to preoccupy us every minute of every waking day.
One more question.
I'm puzzled by all this. Doesn't 209 moot this whole discussion?
And if it does moot this whole discussion by reopening this, aren't you just opening a scab wound that is just now beginning to heal?
Well, 209 moots the discussion, but there is a fellow out there by the name of Ron Rodriguez who is trying to qualify an initiative for the ballot that would, one, repeal 209, two, impose a 1.5 cent sales tax that would be devoted to making sure that nobody pays any student fees. The hip bone's connected to the thigh bone. Mr. Rodriguez would dearly love for the University of California to give his initiative some legs. And that is why Cruz Bustamante, the lieutenant governor, is supporting the effort that Mr. Bagley is pushing here to give some life to this arguably disconnected SP 1 and 209. They're not disconnected. They're all part of the same thing, and the end game is to repeal Proposition 209.
Okay, at this point, I was going to, as I mentioned, give each of our speakers a chance to have a two-minute closing statement. We'll start with Bill.
All right, thank you, sir. Oh, everything has been said. You've been listening. You've been reasonably polite, somewhat attentive. Half a dozen of you agree with me. But that's not the point. This isn't a popularity contest. I'm not writing a book, incidentally. I don't have time. I'm not selling a book. This is not an effort to repeal 209. 209 passed by, somebody said 55%. I thought it was 54. That's not a mandate. There was some confusion. On we are against discrimination. A whole bunch of people said, yeah. We're against quotas. Yeah. So that's not really a mandate, my friends, although the public so voted, and we will adhere as the Board of Regents, as the university, to the law under 209. But we shouldn't be under the thumb. The administration, shouldn't be under the thumb of a Board of Regents who spawned 209. I made that point. If I am so wrong, why, and Ward can answer this, he's got the last 2 minutes, why would every chancellor, these are decent people that we employed, we exercised our fiduciary duty and employed these people, why would every one of the 9 chancellors, why would the president of the university, why would Chang Lin leave Berkeley in part, and I will make this statement as a fact, because of what that Board of Regents did, leave the chancellorship. Why would Joe Martin go back to Harvard? I don't think he got a sinecure. He was chancellor at UCSF. Why would every one of these people say, please don't do this to our university? Were they all so irresponsible? Thank you.
No, I don't think they're irresponsible, but there are just some things in our society we know. We know, the majority of us, the overwhelming majority of us, know that treating people differently because of race and skin color, ethnic background, gender, is wrong. Whether the nine chancellors seeped in political correctness understand that reality or not. If the election on 209 were held today, according to private polls that I've seen, it would pass by twice the margin. The voters understand it. The voters understand this. Why do we think that the voters are all a bunch of idiots? They know that preferences mean preferences. They know what they voted for. This is really about equality. I don't know what's so controversial about this. I just don't understand it. When Bill was in the legislature, he mentioned this to you. Bill was an irreverent, liberal Republican from Marin County. I admired Bill Bagley because Bill Bagley was one of two people who went to Atlanta for the Martin Luther King funeral representing the legislature. Bill was an independent guy. His message was relevant about ending racial discrimination. It was relevant in the 60s. But this isn't the 60s anymore.
May I please speak without your interruptions? I would greatly appreciate that. Here we are at the dawn of the 21st century. Interracial marriages occurring at a rapid rate. One out of every three marriages in this state right now is interracial or interethnic. 14% of all children are multiracial. We have been debating the census for the last 5 weeks or so. People who are wondering, why do I have to check this race box? It's time for us to get beyond this. It's time for a new paradigm about race, not to be mired in the 60s and looking back through the rearview mirror at where we were. It's time to move on and not to try to rewrite history and say that SP1 was wrong. It wasn't wrong. It was right. Thank you.
I want to thank Bill Bagley and Ward Connolly for their time and effort in making our program so successful tonight. I also want to thank all of you for joining with us. Two notes I wanted to mention, getting back to something that Ward mentioned about the quality of students in California and elsewhere for that matter. I mentioned that we have a program called the Independent Scholarship Fund, which is specifically aimed at K-12 children because of the serious mess that the public schools are in. And unless we address these kinds of issues, it doesn't really matter what kind of admissions policies you're going to have, because people are not going to be prepared to live in the world of the 21st century.
Let me give you a hand on that one.
Those of you who have not picked up a copy of Ward's book, again, I strongly recommend that you do so. He'd be delighted to autograph copies for those of you who do have copies.
I'll sign it if you want me to.
On the back page.
It's a real pleasure to have you joining with us. We hope to see you again at our next program. Thank you and good night.
Come here.